So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm senior editor Devinder Hardwar.
I am deputy editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Welcome back, Sherlyn. We have missed
Hello.
You. Hello.
Thank you.
This week, we've got a bunch of stuff. Apple just dumped several major devices on us last week, so fun times you missed out on, Sherlyn. Yeah, we will talk about the MacBook Pro with the M2 chips, and also a bit about the Mac Mini. My review of that isn't done yet, but we'll do that. And also, Samsung's Unpacked event that's going to be next week, and so many things. And we've got a special guest on to talk about that, too. So before we get to all of our news, as always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review wherever you got it, but especially iTunes. You can drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. And you can join us live Thursday mornings, typically around 10:30 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. You can see us do the live show. Sometimes we'll show off gadgets and we'll have some Q&A banter time. It's a great time. So to talk about this new Apple stuff, we've brought on Sam Rutherford, senior writer at Engadget. Hey, Sam, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing okay. It's a busy week. It's also, I'm planning to take 2 weeks off, guys. And you know what happens when you're planning to take time off. You got to do like double the work to make sure you're clear for your time off. So anyway, I'm juggling that in these reviews. How are you guys doing? Happy Lunar New Year. Happy everything.
Thank you.
Yeah. Has not been that happy in America, but I hope you guys have had a good time.
Well, as of today, the recording of this podcast, it is day 5 of the Lunar New Year. It lasts for about 15 days, and every day has a different meaning to it. I forget what today is, but day 10 is everybody's birthday, Renru, in Mandarin. And I was out because I was in LA celebrating with my family, and there was a shooting right when we were there celebrating, so that was great. But not to bring down the podcast.
I didn't realize you were out there. I thought you were.
I think you already did.
Yeah.
You didn't even mention it. It's the year of the rabbit.
Hey, it's my year. Yeah, that means I'm either 12, 24, 36, 48, or 60, or older. So y'all can guess.
12 is a good number. 12 is a good fit.
I'm 12. This is true. I am 12.
Totally 12.
He's a hoppity rabbit.
Let's talk about these things, guys. These new computers. My review of the MacBook Pro with the M2 Max chip, that is the like higher end 14-inch MacBook Pro, just went up. It's everything you expect. I'm not sure if listeners and readers were at all surprised. It's the same case as we had last time we reviewed the MacBook Pro 14-inch and 16-inch 2 years ago. That was the end, actually over a year ago, basically. It was the fall of 2021, and the timing just like is really weird. I think we got these computers a little delayed, as we were talking about last week on the show. Like, it feels like Apple wanted to debut them in the fall, and it took them a while to get these chips ready. So there were some reports around that. Same cases, new chips. And my TLDR of my review is that, hey, if you bought one of those last ones, you definitely don't need to upgrade. But if you are a creative professional, if you're somebody editing tons of video every day or doing 3D rendering and stuff, I did find that the benchmarks are significantly better. And if you are relying on your job to buy you a machine and, you know, time is money, there was one benchmark I did converting a 4K clip to 1080p. It took 41 seconds with last year's M1 Max computer. This year it took 31 seconds. And that was a minute long clip. So that time will compound greatly, you know, over time as you're doing like bigger projects. So I think that's good. Sam, Sherlyn, like any thoughts on these new machines?
You know, I think you kind of hit it on the head right there. And I think, you know, like we see that like incrementally there's like, you know, overall, I think it's like 20% more performance overall, which, you know, not game breaking, but definitely nice. But I think what you said is like, you know, if you like look into some of the finer print, they talk about like it supports more video decoding streams and coding streams, especially for ProRes. And so that's the kind of thing that like you're actually going to notice on a day-to-day basis. So unless like, you know, like you said, unless you're like a content creator, you know, you're working with a lot of videos, you're doing a lot of encodes, you know, that's the kind of thing where it really matters. For the rest of the people, you know, it's not a diehard upgrade. It's not something you like need to go out and replace right away. So it's like, you know, you have, and this kind of speaks to like technology buyers as a whole. Like, you really got to know what the device you're getting for, what it's supposed to do for you, because it's like, you know, not everybody needs the same amount of processing for all across every
That's my main piece of advice for everybody when they tell me like, oh, I need a computer, you know, or my mom needs a computer. And then it's like, okay, what are you going to do with it? You know, what do you need it for? Because that kind of determines everything. Any thoughts, Sherlyn, on this new hardware?
Yeah, no, my thing is this, right? And you made it clear in your summary of your review. It seems like this is an performance aside, this is a somewhat incremental upgrade. There don't seem to be other big changes. So my question is, we're kicking off 2023 with an incremental new MacBook Pro. Is it, like you said, a holdover from last year? Or is it, like, you know what I mean? Like, is this incremental thing the theme for 2023?
I mean,
because we
it's,
had a big incremental year in 2022.
There was a Mark Gurman report from Bloomberg who said that basically this is not going to be a very big year for Apple. Like, maybe they'll show off the AR headset. And even that, like, he later reported that that's going to be delayed. Maybe we'll see a cheaper mixed reality headset. But it doesn't sound like we're going to get much new hardware. But let's be realistic here. The last MacBook Pros we got were huge redesigns. Apple does not do huge redesigns for too long, right? Like the previous MacBook Pro cases we were looking at, the Intel ones, those lasted for like basically 5 years of like a same basic design. So I like this design. I'm not going to knock it. And my other piece of advice is if you somehow still have an Intel Mac, buddy, now is the time to upgrade. Like your life will be exponentially better with one of these new machines.
When is Rosetta being phased out again?
They haven't really timed it because there's a lot of software that still relies on Rosetta emulation. But you know what? As we found, even with the M1 machines, Rosetta emulation is very good and, in fact, sometimes faster than comparable Intel chips. So there, it seems like we've gotten over the compatibility humps. A lot of developers have updated their software. The few that haven't, you know, it still runs fine. And I think people need to modernize their setups a little too. So maybe some people will have to change which tools they're using. But I think that transition is worth it because the M series chips are here to stay. It's not going to be changing anytime soon. So anyway, very good laptop. If you have an Intel, just run out. Run out the door right now. Make a cartoon cloud and just get one of these computers. It'll make your life so much easier. The Mac Mini is kind of interesting because I didn't get to review the Mac Mini when the last one came out, and I wasn't too sad about it because it's like, okay, I saw the performance of the M1 computers and it's the same thing. It's the same chip in a desktop form. Not much of a difference here. What's new this year is that Apple has put in the M2 Pro chip into a Mac Mini, giving us a model that is like in between the base level Mac Mini and the Mac Studio, which starts at $19.99. I got to look up the price of this one again. But to me, that is interesting. Like, does that tickle you guys at all, Sam and Sherlyn?
I forget if the M2 Pro is more than the M2 Max, like more powerful.
No, the Max is Max.
Is the most powerful,
and then
right?
Ultra is more than Max because Ultra is two Maxes, and Pro is better than Base. Pro is better than
I was going to say, this brings up a good point because I feel like Apple needs to, like, clarifies their like Pro, Ultra, Max hierarchy, because you have like Max chips in a Pro laptop, and it's like I understand that, like, you know, if you look at Intel, they have, you know, a huge number of chips, but at least it's like, you know, you have your i3s, your i5s,
it's always,
i7s. It's a little bit more clear, whereas, like, you know, depending on who you ask, like, is Ultra better than Max?
I prefer words to model numbers, and I write about Intel chips all the time. I cannot remember what is the Core i9-12900K.
Okay. I get that part.
Yeah.
But 9 is always going to be better than the i5. The 5 is always going to be better than the i3.
Sure.
So there's got to be a way to, like, I agree. I like the words better than names.
I agree too.
Display manufacturers are always terrible about naming monitors and stuff like that. And so, like, I don't want to go back to like just random numbers and letters. I think there's a way where you can have it like just a little signifier so it's a little bit easier to understand.
Like, Max should be the Max. Max should be the Max. Why is there an Ultra above the Max?
I think because it felt like that was another idea, right? But also, so listen, if you make like a little side by side comparison of all these computers and you just look at the price, like, I think that's all. Once you understand those three terms, and first of all, Ultra is not something 99% of the population will ever need to worry about, right? Like the Mac Studio, the Ultra chip version of that, that's a $4,000 computer. So,
oh yeah, super overkill.
Most people will not be buying that. Just to clarify, the M2 Pro Mac Mini starts at $12.99 now, which is sounds expensive for a Mac Mini, but that is a faster chip. Like, that is a much faster chip with better graphics. Has a 10-core CPU, 16-core GPU compared to the base Mac Mini, which has an 8-core CPU, 10-core GPU. That's a big step up. And it is that in-between machine that it felt like we were missing, right, Sam?
Oh, totally. And I think, like, you know, if I was going to go buy like a Mac computer for my home use, that's probably the one that I would get, because the price is, you know, pretty, you know, approachable, and you get better performance, but it's not, you're not spending a ton of money for the studio. And so, like, I've always loved the Mac Mini because it's like, you know, it's a small little cute,
so cute.
Desktop.
So cute. Yeah.
And so, you know, if I want a small station, and I've never really liked all-in-ones. And so I love having that ability to, like, okay, here I can upgrade the box, and then I can have a monitor, and the monitor will be good for a really long time, you know, 8-10 years maybe. And so you have that flexibility, and a little bit of a performance boost is what all we really needed in the first place.
It's totally. I've gotten some questions from people being like, so where is the 27-inch iMac? Where are we going to get bigger iMacs? I'm like, dude, like, let go of that dream of the iMac, because first of all, it is so restrictive in terms of what you get from an iMac, whereas you could get a nice monitor, you know, for not that much, like for a couple $100, you could get a pretty decent monitor, and you have a beautiful system that's like, not, you can't dive in there and upgrade RAM stuff, but you can replace the box whenever you need to and take that box, put it under your TV, make it a little like media computer or something. Like, it's the flexibility of the Mac Mini I've always liked. The base model is $599. That is a very nice price for like a computer you stick somewhere, like let it just run your Plex server or something, or just let it be your like something you're doing on your TV. I feel like even for creatives, like that base model is fine. Like, you could do a ton of work with that. So anyway, Mac Mini, good. I have not finished this review yet, but I'm working on it. I'm also dealing with Sundance stuff. So there's at least one review I'll be getting out of Sundance. It's been kind of a weak year for us, but a good year for movies in general. Any other questions about these guys? Because I want to hear about Samsung stuff when you're ready.
Yeah, well, I want to point out that user name Y in our live chat here on the YouTube channel gave some suggestions. One, how about Pro Max for the names for the M2 chips? I don't know that that'll work, but Y also said, I think they should be C, B, A, and S tiers. So like the letters A, B, and C, and then S. So
no.
Going back
that's,
to
no.
Sort,
that's
sort
the,
of the
Mercedes,
numerical.
That's the Mercedes way of
I hate it.
Of doing
I hate
tiers.
It. I like words. I like words. Hey, you learn what the words mean like once, right? Like, and you look at the pricing.
Well,
you know,
I learned them once and then I forgot. I'm like, it's Pro higher than Max?
It's fine. You learn again.
It's
totally okay. It's better. It's easier than like looking up the like model guidance of a, like an Intel chip. Oh my God.
All I have to say is, if you're listening or watching and you have better ideas on what the names should be, you should send them
to
us
know
at
what you think.
But
hey, Pro, Ultra, Max, like it, you can figure them out. What's up?
Oh, I was going to say, I know, Sherlyn, I know you love Four Segway. So are you ready for this?
Okay.
So you're talking from one
company
in. With Ultra machines.
Oh,
and
to
now
another
we're moving
Ultra?
To what we're expecting from Samsung, which includes not one, but two potential
Ultra
devices.
Talk about a company that needs help with product names. How about that? Okay.
Yeah.
I will first say that I did think about that transition too, Sam. So
okay.
Kudos.
Great minds think alike, you know.
Yes. Well, Samsung needs help with product names because they have way too many products. Let's put it that way. But at least there's the A series that we know is sort of A for affordable. S series, S for, I don't know, special, super.
Please
and
go
then,
on.
And then the Z series, because there's the letter Z folds, you know? It's it's pretty clear. Pretty clear to me. So I don't know.
I feel like you've been Samsung pilled in terms of their
I think
Steve.
I think the names are fine. I think they're nowhere near Sony level. So
Sony's the worst.
But,
Sony, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, what do you want to tell us what to expect from Samsung? Or I mean, you and I both sort of have been paying attention to the leaks and stuff.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, as everybody knows, Samsung has its big Unpacked event next week on February 1st. And this is the first one of the year. So they're going to be announcing a whole bunch of devices. Now, they haven't actually gone out and said, you know, exactly what they're going to be announcing. But based on, you know, leaks and rumors, we're really looking at two main categories of new devices. There's the new S23 family, which includes, we're expecting an S23 Ultra, a Plus, and a standard S23. So very similar to what we have now. And then, as kind of a maybe, you know, curveball a little bit, there's going to be a whole bunch of new Galaxy Book laptops, which includes potentially a Galaxy Book Ultra for the first time.
I see. So when we tend to like anticipate or prep for these events, we tend to guess like what's going to come out. We always know the phones, right? And that's a little more predictable. For the other product category, I was like maybe tablets, because last year didn't they do the S, what was it, the 9, the Tab S9 Pro?
The S8 series. So yeah, that came out like in the early spring last year. So it's a little weird that we're not hearing about any new Samsung tablets. But I guess, you know, maybe, you know, something later this spring or early summer. We'll see.
Instead, they're doing laptops, the Galaxy Books, which to be fair is due an update, right? Like the Galaxy Book series, I love, by the way, the Galaxy Books. I mean, a Galaxy Book laptop. This podcast is being recorded on my Galaxy Book Flex right now, talking about Flex. But the latest ones were the Galaxy Book 2 series, I believe, the Book 2 Pro and the Book 2 Pro 360. And they're like about to get kind of bland to me. I don't know. Sam, have you got a lot of experience with these laptops? Dev, yourself too?
I've not seen them, no.
Yeah, I mean, so I think a few months or last year and into, you know, 2021, Samsung actually like said that, like, hey, we want to put a renewed focus on our computing division. And that, you know, especially during the pandemic, that made a ton of sense. Everyone was out buying laptops. Recently, the laptop market is kind of dropped
by quite a bit. Yeah.
Between that and the GPU market kind of cratering, I'm not sure this is like the best timed slated announcements for them, but we'll see. I mean, I'm intrigued by the idea of a Galaxy Book Ultra. And so based on, you know, leaks so far, we're expecting this to be like a 16-inch system with a discrete GPU, which would be somewhat rare for a Galaxy Book laptop. And so I like the idea, and, you know, adding into the fact that, like, you know, Samsung makes great displays, and we're probably going to get an AMOLED display, you know, some sort of like high res, you know, very colorful display. I like the ingredients. The design of the laptops has, you know, sometimes I feel like they're a bit too understated for their own good, but, you know, we'll see how that changes when, you know, they actually announce them for real next week.
Is there something you guys would love to see? Like, we've heard some rumors, but like, what does Samsung actually need now? Because they have way too many products and way too many models within those products.
I personally, the reason I keep using the Galaxy Book Flex that I have been using is its onboard S Pen. It's not a separate S Pen that you have to like attach magnetically to the lid. It's got its own slot for like on the phone. So I really do like that. I use it to sign a lot of embargoes over and over and over again for my job. And the touchscreen is nice. I like the design of the Galaxy Book Flex. It doesn't look like a MacBook the way the more recent Galaxy Books do. So maybe bring that back, Samsung. Like, I would really love that. But otherwise, I don't expect a lot from PCs. I do understand that like a lot of people bought laptops during the pandemic to work from home with. And so now you're only 2 years out and no one's really looking to upgrade. So it is weird timing, like Sam said. But I don't know, Sam, what do you want Samsung to do?
Samsung's always in this hard spot because like they don't, you know, they don't make their own OS like Apple or, you know, Microsoft does. And, you know, they're not exactly like a leader when it comes to like PCs. And so I guess it's like you really want more integration between the Galaxy phone owners and the Galaxy laptop owners. And so hopefully we're going to get a little bit more integration on terms of like, you know, just making it easier to share files, hand off calls, stuff like that. I mean, granted, a lot of this stuff is things that like people love about the Apple ecosystem. And so it's like, you know, I think at the very least, I want to see Samsung try to re-up that more. That, you know, they have partnered with Windows before on like the Your Phone app integration, which is fine, but it doesn't feel as smooth or as seamless as you really want it to be. And so I think it's just like, you know, more iteration on that is definitely what I'm looking for.
I think that Samsung's tried a version of that for a while, like SideFlow or Side something. They had a software name that was kind of
right,
like
but there's always features that don't work together. And it's like, you like it just feels kind of like a half measure. And it's like, I need a more encompassing approach to this like whole design pattern.
Samsung was always about like throwing a ton of things together, especially features that didn't work, and then never really refining them too much, I guess. Yeah.
I want to quickly point out a comment in the chat before I talk more about what I really want to see in laptops. Diwa Alejandro Galvez says that they hope Samsung brings their awesome smartphone screens to their laptops, like the one 1440p 120Hz LTPO dynamic AMOLED screens, as well as ports. If Samsung wants a piece of the corporate market, use ports. Companies still use legacy connectors, and that's why ThinkPads and Elite books are being used instead of Macs, which is a very good point. I would want to take this opportunity to talk also about like just general laptop stuff, right? What I want from a laptop, I want what Lenovo did at CES. Give me that ThinkBook with a magnetic magic bay where I can slap on a selfie light. Just really just get lit.
Really leaning into your selfie queen title there.
Look, I've ditched that title ages ago now. I don't know what you're talking about. Never heard her. Never heard of her. Don't
I
know
think
who
we
that
can
is.
Find her old YouTube videos. They're out there.
God damn.
Yeah. You never deleted them. I hear you. I hear you, Sherlyn. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, though, I don't know if you guys remember like 2010 era Samsung and what they were doing with laptops. Like that was when Well, it was like they had the super thin models and there weren't many PC makers like making straight up a MacBook Air, you know, or a MacBook Pro type of thing. And Samsung was kind of on the bleeding edge. I used to walk by. There was like a Samsung storefront in the Columbus Circle, in that big Columbus Circle mall, right? And occasionally I'd walk by and go look at that thing. And now it's like every other PC maker has just really leapt past them. So it is weird how Samsung, which ended up dominating mobile, certainly with Android, and has done a decent job with TVs, even though they were slow to get to OLED, they did kind of leave PCs behind. I wonder, are you guys surprised they haven't like gobbled up Acer or somebody, you know, to get in some of that innovation?
Who would buy Acer though?
I don't know. Hey, listen, Acer makes good computers.
Sorry,
Sam.
Why are you saying sorry to me? I don't work for Acer.
Sam, who has an Acer tattoo.
Yeah. no, I mean, I think that's a good point, Dev. Like, you're like, it's kind of surprising that Samsung isn't a bigger player in the laptop space because it really feels like they should be. And like, you know, like in chat, I do want to see like 120Hz display with like nice AMOLED tech. That'd be great. And so, you know, we've seen the refresh rates on laptops go up. And so that's really nice. And so if you add in like the really vibrant colors of, you know, Samsung's, you know, AMOLED screens, I think that'll be maybe give it a little feather in its cap. But, you know, as far as like Samsung tried to get into gaming laptops a while back with their Odyssey systems. And it's like,
oh, God.
They just didn't. The specs weren't right. The design was like just fell off. And so it's just weird to see, you know, a company who is like so dominant in the smartphone space, like seem to be like treading water when it comes to laptops. And so it's just a weird dynamic.
It's like everyone's playing Age of Empires, right? And they put all their resources in mobile. Let's get all of our troops out of everything else. Mobile, 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 and maybe some TVs.
I got that reference.
Yes.
I understand.
Also, I mean, they were big into mobile VR, right? They were teaming up with Oculus.
The Gear
before.
Headsets.
The Gear headsets. Not the best things in the world, but they accomplished something, you know, that not many other companies were playing with. So I do feel like Samsung is a big enough company that they should be able to like play in many pools at this point. So I don't know. And hey, I talk crap about Android tablets, but the one Android tablet I don't hate is like whatever Samsung is putting out. Because I remember going to the launch event for like the Galaxy Tab S2 or something. And they were like, oh, they put OLED in this and it looks incredible. And I could turn on that tablet today. Still, the thing is basically 10 years old now. It still looks very nice. It's not the best mm-hmm. resolution, but it still looks nice.
Yeah, best displays and probably the best design overall chassis build quality on the Android tablet side.
I want to circle back because we talked a lot about the laptops, but I just realized we didn't talk a lot about what we expect from the phones this year, right? I know some of the leaks point to the Galaxy S23 Ultra potentially having a 200 megapixel camera back.
Please.
Well, let's say, like, adding weight to this rumor is the fact that Samsung on January 17th, on my day off, announced its new ISOCELL HP sensor, if I'm not wrong. Right, Sam?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like Samsung has always really tried to push the boundaries when it comes to, like, the S23 Ultra specifically. Last year, we had a 100 megapixel camera, which, you know, kind of felt like overkill, but you know, when you combine it with like the 10x optical zoom, suddenly it makes a little bit more sense. 200 megapixels seems like, what are you doing? I don't know what kind of pixel binning they're doing. It must be some like more than 10x pixel binning because
they want to give you good zooming, I guess, or good cropping too. So maybe,
right.
Maybe that's the thing.
So it'll be interesting to see if they offer modes where like you can switch between like your standard pixel binning mode, maybe like a medium setting, or like obviously, and you want that full resolution mode. Not all the time. It's something like you want to toggle on because you're like, oh, you're taking a landscape, and I want all of those pictures or pixels.
Mm-hmm. And this also could make for better video capture. I think the S22 Ultra already captured something like 8K video, right?
Stop! So, yeah, stop!
It was 8K at 24 FPS for the S22. Mm-hmm. So we'll see, if that changes for the S23
series. I just want to walk down the street and what resolution are you shooting at? 8K? Slap it out of their hands. It's a stupid idea. Don't do it. Good God.
Well, I mean, unless you get like the 1 terabyte phone version, you're going to run out of storage.
You get the 1 terabyte phone, you're out of storage in like half an hour. So stupid. Are you going to play this on your TV? Really?
Yeah, what are you watching 8K on? That's my biggest problem. What are you watching it on?
Hey, that's synergy. Samsung makes 8K TVs. You figured out their marketing strategy.
You want to see every pixel of that like low basic quality sensor, you know? Like,
yeah.
8K's for IMAX cameras. Yeah.
Right. This is how you know people have too much money, right? When they get the 8K phone and they buy the 8K TV just to stream their shitty 8K
it's still
phone
look like
footage.
Garbage. It's still going to look like garbage because you just have more pixels for your garbage.
If you have that much money, you can talk to me. We will invest it for you. Okay?
Invest it for sure. Sherlyn, the new spokesperson for Betterment, I guess. Like, just easy investing. I'm
trying to stay away from sponsorships and biases or whatever. That's why I said invested. Otherwise, I'd be like, give it to me. But that's not great.
Before we wrap this, I do have to, I just need to say this because Sam is here.
Mm.
Sam, what song do you want Samsung to sing?
What's the latest K-pop?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, K-pop. Well, during the event too, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great. I like Halazia by I forget who. Halazia is a great song. But there's Vibes. There is Anti-Fragile. There's a lot. I will say Miley Cyrus has a new banger that's been top of the charts, you know, for a bit. So.
Yeah, I'm remembering like all the previous unpacks. There's been like a new like mini BTS music
cringe.
Video.
I want Samsung to go full vibe. On surprise us all. Bring Ice Spice down to from the Bronx to do one of her things. Who is like the new hot hip hop girl? And just like be modern, be young, Samsung. We know you can do it. Let Ice Spice do her thing on your stage. Let's move on to some other news. And one story that popped up that Ben, our podcast producer, highlighted for us is, do you guys remember the no-fly list? Do you remember that like awful piece of like post 9/11 reactionary stuff that America did to keep people off of airlines? Because if you were potentially, according to the government, if you were a potential danger in the air, if you had a Muslim sounding name, you could be banned from flying. And that is the whole thing. What's funny is that the no-fly list was apparently leaked online entirely by Commute Air. So a hacker named Maya Arson Crimeu was the person. She's a 23-year-old trans programmer from Switzerland who poked around servers and kind of found this thing just sitting out in the open. Ben is also pointing out, the no-fly list doesn't actually keep you from flying, but it does show up as a flag on your ticket. And in some airports, it's really up to the TSA like agent there. The whole thing, we should talk about why the TSA shouldn't exist. At that point, you can be kicked off a flight or you could be flagged for extended search or something like that. So I do remember when I used to fly with my wife early on, like her tickets would get flagged for potentially no reason and we would have to go through extra security. But there would be these extra like XXX marks on tickets. So it's a whole thing. This hacker found the list just sitting on a public server from Commute Air, posted it online. It looks exactly as you'd expect, according to Tector, like a lot of Middle Eastern names, a lot of different names, some repeats, some for like names that are maybe aliases and misspellings for people. It's just weird. Like, what do you guys think about this hack in particular and thoughts on the no-fly list, which is still a thing, apparently, in 2023?
One thing that I think is really funny is that apparently the file was literally called nofly.csv, which is just hilarious.
Please.
It's like, okay, this is, you're not trying to hide this at all, apparently. And the fact that it was, like, I think it was unencrypted, and they just, you know, didn't have to do any much work to
It was sitting on a public server. So all she had to do was some, like, directory searches, and she found it.
So that's just kind of funny to me. And, like, you know, kind of jumping off what you said, Devinder, like, so I, some personal info, I was actually born in Saudi Arabia. And so on my passport, it says, you know, country of birth, Saudi Arabia.
Oh, no!
And so I used to get patted down constantly. And especially, like, when I would, like, bring, like, weird-ass laptops on planes, I would always get, like, you know, hey, can you step aside? We need to check your luggage. And it's, all the time, so...
Yep. I remember just trying to travel after 9/11 as a brown person with a... I don't have a Muslim-sounding name, but I have a name that confuses people, and... My tickets wouldn't get flagged, but certainly security would be like, can we look at your stuff? Can I look at your bag? I'm like, sure, dude. Okay. Yeah. So
yeah, this is all mildly triggering. Have you done the gunpowder test?
Yeah.
Have you all been
told
to do that?
In New York by NYPD. It's funny because like,
mine is in airports.
That is in airports, but NYPD does like a drug test too. Like they just like, they line up, they put up tables and they're like, they just like point at people like, you come here. And it became so common for me where I'd be like, oh, yeah, hey, buddy, what's up? Here, take a look. Because, like, it would happen to me every couple weeks. Great.
One time I got dragged away. I didn't get dragged that much, right? But I got dragged into extra security one time because my bag has, I guess, too many wires in it. And this was before
bags,
I was even a tech
reporter.
Our bags
do look dangerous. Like, our bags under a security camera, like, when we're traveling with, like, three computers and everything.
Yeah, it looks like a circuit is in there. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Is this a bomb?
Okay, so...
Yeah.
But because of that one time early in my, like, traveling days, I was in my early 20s or something, someone pulled me aside and was like, this is too many wires. And I was like, oh, shoot, okay. So then now, until today, when I travel, I make sure to loop my wires in a very specific way.
But also, the response is that illegal? They're just...
I don't know.
It's not illegal.
They're just giving you a hard time.
They're just giving you
I don't think it's illegal what I did, but they were like, oh, that's why we pulled you away. Yeah, and I was like, well, great. Okay. I was traveling on my own, a single woman, very young.
It's not great. But yeah, the no-fly list looks... what we're like basically what you would expect. Let me see here. Disproportionate number of Arab, Middle Eastern, South Asian names. Yes, Russian arms dealer Viktor Bout in 16 aliases. He's been known to use a bunch of Irish nationals with ties to the IRA and an 8-year-old. There were stories about young kids and their parents suing the US government because like they were put on the no-fly list when they were 7 months old or something. So this is a huge. It's kind of a crazy thing that this still even exists. And I feel like at some point we should look at the TSA and be like, hey, are you helping? Are you doing anything? These relics of like post 9/11 America, which we're still living with, which still makes our lives difficult. Do want to shout out Maya Arson Krimu's website. It's at maya.krimu.gay. Best URL ever. And her website is like a hot pink late 90s GeoCity thing with kitties, and it's I look at websites like this and I'm like, ah, no CSS, no.
Oh, it's got the 88x31 buttons.
Yeah,
it's the lightest web page in the world. It loads like lightning.
This is just, it's text and tables, maybe even if that. Yeah,
the little buttons at the bottom are giving me flashbacks.
Yeah. I love the little
so
buttons.
Nice. 88x31. I love those
little things. The little buttons. She's part of a web ring. Gotta love it.
Lavender.software
web ring. And also those little logos are like, I remember when I was making websites in late 90s, be like, I'm gonna put this little Netscape thing here because my website is best viewed in Netscape Navigator 4.0.
Yes. I did the little visitor count tracker things too.
I loved it. I would sit there and like refer every day after school, I'd run back and go see that. Anyway, this is just a funny story. The no-fly list still exists. And it's funny that, just kind of out there, thanks to Commute Air. One quick note I want to make is last week we talked about Microsoft's major layoffs. They announced they'd be laying off 10,000 people between now and the third quarter. This week, hey, guess what happened, guys? Monday morning, Microsoft announces a massive investment in OpenAI, reportedly up to $10 billion. Then I reported on Microsoft's earnings report. Microsoft earned $52.7 billion in revenue, up 2% from last year. Slight miss from what the analysts expected, but you know, pretty decent. Just kind of funny to take those numbers in comparison to like, buddy, we have to lose 10,000 jobs. We're dying over here. I will note that in those earnings, profits fell by 12% to $16.4 billion. And I think that is what is worrying Microsoft. All these big companies are worried about where the economy is going. They're also like, PC downturn is hurting them internally. They still want to be able to take money and give it back to shareholders. And that's like the most important thing for a lot of these companies, to keep the shareholders happy. So to do that, they will cut staff. And a lot of companies also overhired during the pandemic too. So yeah, it's a whole thing. The PC market is kind of falling apart a bit. But
yeah, I think the Surface line especially was hit the hardest out of a lot of like the big, you know, laptop brands. So you know, that's a bit unfortunate. Although at the same time, I think there was also some news talking about how at the same or basically the same day that Microsoft announced layoffs, they had a fancy party in Europe for some of the execs, and Sting showed
Sting
up and
there.
Sting played for them. So maybe, hey, Microsoft, if you're going to announce some layoffs, don't have a party at the same
Do
time
the
you're
Sting
doing
party.
It.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, not a great look.
It's a shame. There was a story, I don't have the link for this here too, but we did talk about Tim Cook drastically reducing his salary too. And I believe Apple is actually one of those companies that has not announced massive layoffs. And so many of these CEOs, Satya Nadella, pretty much all of them, Sundar Pichai as well at Google, are like, I take full responsibility for these layoffs. Oh, do you? Do you? How?
Where it hurts or no.
Where it hurts or no. The Tim Cook thing is like he basically shrunk his salary in half or by a significant amount. And Tim Cook's still going to be fine. Like he's still making tens of millions of dollars a year. He's still going to make a ton of money from Apple stock and everything and other bonuses from the company. But the key is like you don't have to get rid of people, you know? So I just want to point that out.
The way the math works out, mm-hmm. Tim Cook's half of his salary, you know, numerically probably saves maybe what, like a handful of workers mm-hmm. or something, but is the fact that they at least thought to do that first, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
He took a 40% pay cut, reducing his salary to $49 million. That's more than just
a handful.
Okay,
that's more than a handful
that's a lot
of people. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people. If you're making, I'm sorry, I assume he makes less than I thought. No.
If you're Tim Cook, should be making close to $100 million a year, apparently. That's how.
Okay, so $50 million. Yeah, now I know what it's salary to aim for. Thank you very much. Our managing editor listening to
life
this
goals.
Right now.
Life goals for
this
sure.
This is my goals. Goals mm-hmm. right now. No, but $50 million. Yeah, there you go. That's a lot of money. That saves at least like 50 people their jobs.
I think DaVinci brings up a really good point though. It's like, you know, there's got at some point the buck has to stop with the employers or these corporations,
yes.
because they overhired during the pandemic, and now people who have not been there for very long, some of them are just losing their jobs. And it's like there's got to be some sort of, I mean, you hate to turn to like government regulation on to everything, but like you really wish that there would be some sort of check and balance
yeah.
systems.
I feel like
for companies who overhire and then just have layoffs, they're not facing any repercussions for this, and they're kind of just messing with a lot of their employees or former employees, and it just, you know, it almost feels a little bit abusive.
Yeah, maybe something should be triggered if you're announcing over 1,000, you know, employees being laid off, like. Should be looking
especially after hiring a record number of people the year before.
Exactly.
Did Apple also hire a lot of people during
yeah,
that rush?
It sounds like Apple had a big, like everybody was doing it because
I know Meta went wild.
Everyone's at home. Maybe Apple didn't go as hard as everybody else, but certainly, from what I see, Tim Cook is the only CEO who took a personal hit. We saw stories around the Ubisoft CEO being like, now it's up to you, workers, to tighten your belts and, you know, make do with what we're working on here. And it's just such a mess.
I also think that there's a lot of money being spent in areas that don't need to be spent, where, like, I look at the budget for a lot of PR and marketing departments. I don't know necessarily the number, the figure, but I think that there's a lot of money being spent flying people places that don't need to be flown places. So, I don't know. Maybe look at other areas. Like, dude named Charlie in the chat, that's what reminded me of this budget thing, says, fire all the TikTok brunchers. Like maybe we don't need to engage so much with I don't know.
No, I don't. I don't know. I don't, for some companies, maybe they do need that. But
for some,
I don't think the low level employees, no matter who they are, no matter what their jobs are, even if you find them annoying, they are not the problem. They're not the ones who hire, you know, too many people. They're not the ones deciding the overall budget. Hey, I'm very annoyed by the story. I'm also very annoyed by the story we've heard about Justin Roiland, the co-creator of Rick and Morty. Adult Swim just fired him because there have been ongoing revelations about domestic violence charges, his gross behavior towards younger fans as well. Yeah, I like Rick and Morty, but apparently Justin Roiland has been in, face it, he's like been in court for years dealing with this thing. It's been very quiet up until now. And yeah, the case just broke recently. So lots of repercussions here. I don't know if you guys care about Rick and Morty, but it is, it's fascinating to see like how quickly Adult Swim was just like, the show will go on, but we don't need this dude. I like the show, but totally you could replace those voices. And Rick and Morty is a show made up of lots of writers, lots of creative talent. So don't necessarily need him there too. Thoughts?
I was kind of out on Rick and Morty mm-hmm. after the whole Szechuan sauce debacle. Yeah, yeah. And so I like, you know, I appreciate what the show does. You know, it is humorous, but at the same time, I'm not like a deep fan. So it's like, okay, good. This is, you know, this is probably for the better of the show. Adult Swim is, you know, I think they didn't really have a choice. Like, you can't continue working with this person.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're doing what they have to do.
And Adult Swim, like, has been also, like, reported for not being the best place to work throughout many shows there. Like, not the best overall work culture in general. So who knows how much, like, they were, like, just allowed some of this to happen. Yeah. Thoughts, Sherlyn? Because, yeah.
My thoughts mm-hmm. my thoughts are everyone has secrets and... Yeah. All of our don't worship heroes.
Don't worship
right?
your heroes, and don't be a shitbag. Don't be. How about
also,
that?
Also, don't be a bad person.
Don't be a bad person.
There you go.
In other news, Wikipedia has done its first desktop redesign in a decade, and it. Have you guys visited Wikipedia recently? Like, have you just been like surprised by the fact that oh my god, Wikipedia of all places looks different now?
I kind of had to stop because they were like the aggro donation requests were uh-huh. a little too much for me, so I was like not looking at it for a bit. Uh-huh. I also mostly look at it on mobile nowadays.
Sure, I think this affects mobile. Well, no, this is a desktop redesign, but you know this new thing, like it's cleaner. I think it's a lot cleaner. There's a lot less like random. I think Wikipedia was like the king of like table based design for a while, like simple mm-hmm, text, mm-hmm. just let everything load quickly. I like it. I think it's cleaner. I don't think Wikipedia needs to do much. Wikipedia is like Craigslist, right? It is an internet good. And yeah, it sucks that they have to keep asking for money, but the Wikimedia Foundation needs money. So yeah.
Yeah. I always like those little requests from Jimmy Wales. Yeah, Jimmy Wales. Hey, oh, I haven't seen you in a while. Come back. You know, sure. I'll toss you a dollar. I mean, like I use Wikipedia like enough that like, you know, exactly. I'll throw them contribute a little bit.
It is
my one complaint mm-hmm. about the new design is like in general, I think it's really good. They didn't change too much, which is like probably the best choice for any redesign, especially for, you know, a resource like Wikipedia. My one issue is that the widescreen support is still not great on desktop.
Yeah,
and it's just like there's too much white space on the left and the right. And it's like if you're going to redo the desktop, just hey, widescreen monitors or more. And I'm not even talking about ultra wide. I'm just talking about general widescreen monitors. Like,
but,
you know, give me a little bit more information mm-hmm. on the page at once.
You want to like wrap to be a little wider, I guess. Like they basically have a pretty narrow column. I don't know. I tend to keep my windows in like a basic narrow size that fits like most web pages. So I have not noticed that. But are you full screening windows over there, Sam? Like a crazy person?
I have dual monitor, so yeah. I do have full screen on the, you know, left. And then, like, you know, depending on what I'm doing, I'll have, like, you know, split panes on the other one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Totally get that. Nice to see Wikipedia doing something new. We found a story that Sherlyn may like. It's about poop.
Oh, tell me more.
Scientists found a new emperor penguin colony by tracking poo markings from space.
Okay, you could have led with this is about penguins, not poo.
It is about penguins
but go
and
on.
Poop.
Yeah, even better. No, well, okay, cool.
It's about penguin poop.
I prefer the penguin. Okay.
But it is funny to see like an announcement like this coming just because, hey, we were looking at these things from space. And there are more emperor penguins. I believe like they are, I don't know if they're actually endangered, but it's not like we don't have a ton of emperor penguins out there. So it's really nice to find a new, you know, a new batch of them. And also, it's really hard to explore, like, what's happening in Antarctica. So it's kind of cool that satellite imagery can reveal some of this stuff for us, yeah.
I mean, the fact that we haven't found this colony before is probably good, because maybe it means there's more penguins out there than we think there are, which is, like, you know, random thing. I used to work in an aquarium, uh-huh. and I used to take care of penguins. So
you know
this
what
is
it
awesome
smells
news.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Penguins are very loud and they're very smelly, and do not mess with them during mating season or else they will peck your hands off.
Oh, man. I feel like that's...
What type of penguins, Sam? I forget.
I work with African penguins, little blue penguins, which are the tiny little Australian penguins, and rockhoppers.
Very nice. Some context from the article. For the last 15 years, the British Antarctic Survey has been searching for new penguin colonies by using satellite imagery to spot the telltale poo stains. Of the 66 colonies humans have known about in Antarctica, exactly half have been found using satellites. So that's cool. That is super cool.
I want to wipe out their little poo.
I don't think you do.
Take a Roomba.
I think you have Roomba your auntie mug, Sherlyn.
No, you don't. You
wanna,
say that
now. You want to do some poo practice? You have an auntie mug, there's a pooing creature right there for you to help out with.
I'm good. Yeah. I'm good.
Sherlyn, we have some diapers if you want to help out.
Really get your practice in. Okay, let's talk about some stories happening around Engadget. Dan Cooper reviewed Poker Face, the new Rian Johnson show that's on Peacock. And I'd say it's worth checking out his review. And I've seen most of the season of this show. And goddamn, the show is good. It is so, so good. It is very much Columbo in that it is a crime show, kind of like a mystery show. But it starts with the opening scene is exactly how the crime happened, right? Like, who did it? Why it happened, you get all that context. And Natasha Lyonne stars as somebody who has sort of a superpower. They never talk about it as a superpower, but she has the ability to tell whenever anybody is lying. And that's it. And she's not a cop. She's not like really an investigator. She's kind of somebody who she's like somebody who's been a part of the gambling underworld. After the first episode, she's basically on the run. And in every episode, she is meeting new characters, new people, new settings. It is such a throwback to old school TV shows where, like, yeah, we're in a diner town now. We're in a barbecue town now. And, man, it reminds me of watching Columbo. It reminds me of watching Murder, She Wrote, because there's a lot of that in here, too. It is really cool. I think you'd enjoy it, Sherlyn. Sam, I'm not sure if this is kind of your deal, but I love Rian Johnson. This is yet another successful Rian Johnson project. So
yeah. I just watched Glass Onion not too long ago.
Oh, that was so good.
So yeah, I'm definitely down for it. This sounds like the breath of fresh air I need from all of the like really awful cable cop docudrama.
Yep. It is things. Like we've been so, I think we've been drowning in like peak TV serialized narratives for so long, and this one's just like, hey, new adventure every week. You like Natasha Lyonne? Let's hang out with Natasha Lyonne. She has the power to tell whenever anybody's lying. I like when Rian Johnson does this too, because if you remember the first Knives Out movie, the lead character could not tell a lie, and adding these like little bits of like character traits really lets you have fun with like how this narrative works. So anyway, check out Poker Face. It's on Peacock. It is worth doing the Peacock preview for that. And also, yeah, check it out. I think it's really good.
That was the Around Engadget story, right?
That's the Around Engadget story. Well, there's that. Steve Dent also reviewed the 4-movie theater UST ultra short throw projector for us, and he really liked it. He scored this thing a 92. It's a $3,000 projector, one of those ones that sit right in front of your screen or the wall, so you don't need to like wire it up to the back of your room.
Oh,
or your
ultra
ceiling.
Short throw. Ultra short throw. UST.
UST. Okay. It's a triple laser, has really good color accuracy, surprisingly good sound. And after reading this, and also after getting rid of a projector I've had for a while that I just also reviewed, the LG Cinebeam, the latest Cinebeam, I sent that back to LG. I'm like, I need something. I need this back. And then, funny enough, Steve reviewed this 4-movie thing. It is the only ultra short throw I've seen that has Dolby Vision support. And also, projectors in general don't really do Dolby Vision and HDR very much. So I got that. I ordered it, got it within a week. I'm using it to watch Sundance movies and stuff now. It is not as bright as the LG, but it is, you know, for your money. It's a really great 4K projector, and the Dolby Vision stuff, the color accuracy stuff looks really, really good. So just wanted to shout this out. Check out Steve's review. If you're looking for a projector like this, it may be worth considering. I do know some projector people, reviewers, don't really recommend ultra short throws to consumers. Wirecutter's most recent projector guide doesn't recommend them at all. I do feel like that is a bit, maybe it's a little bit of an archaic mentality, because
I feel like that trend was starting when they first came out. They were very janky, but I think it's been a long enough where that tech has really matured
And the price has come down like quite a bit. Like, guys, when we were first seeing these ultra short throw projectors, remember Sony had some stuff in like 2013, 2014 at CES. And I would talk to Sony and be like, cool, this is amazing. How much does this cost? Like $40,000.
You're right. Yeah. It's completely unattainable.
And I want to slap that Sony spokesperson. It's like, what are you, who is this for? What? LG started showing off their Cinebeam, I really think around 2019. So I was also testing that one for a bit. Those things started at $6,000. And now we have this one from 4Movie, which, by the way, is a this is a version of a Xiaomi projector that's been rebadged for America. So it's Xiaomi combined with a laser tech company to produce this in America. So yeah, Xiaomi's here. This is an Android TV projector. $3,000. Sounds like a lot of money, but if you are serious about getting like a good home theater projector, your price range is $2,000 to $5,000. And the one Wirecutter was recommending, it was like the latest Epson. It's like the Epson LS12000, I think. That thing starts at, that's a $5,000 projector. So it, and that's a traditional rear throw installed in the back of your room or like put it on a cabinet or something. I didn't want to deal with that. And this thing just seemed so much better. So anyway, this worked out pretty well. I'm really liking it. Steve Dent, who reviews a lot of projectors for us, really loved it as well. I think it's worth checking out if you have a projector in your future. Just make sure you try to get an ALR screen. Those are screens that reject light from like the top and the side. So that helps these things work better in the daylight. Sam.
Yeah, I was going to say the hardest thing about projectors is like, there's like two kinds of people in the world. There's TV people and there's projector people. And if you decide to cross that line into the projector world, like you got to go make new friends. You got to like redesign
you can be
your
both.
House.
No, you can be both, Sam. Like I in 20,
Dev is both.
Yeah, I am both. Like I wrote up like I fit a projector into my Crown Heights apartment like in like 2016 or 2015.
Right, but it's like that, those sacrifices. You have like a new like perspective on the world for because sure. It's like, oh man, can I fit like a screen in there? Yeah. Like
we're gonna put every time like I'm going to if I look at friends like sometimes friends send me houses they're looking at. Apartments are looking at, but you could slip a bad boy there. He could put a 100 inch screen on that wall. You can totally live with a projector and a TV, and I did that in New York for a while. Right now I'm lucky enough to have a basement, and in that basement we installed like a ceiling mounted projector thing, a projector screen that can roll down when it needs to, and it's super useful.
That's the nice thing. So you can have it like disappear when you need it and then show up, you know.
Projectors
are
great though, guys.
Movies.
And you could do it in an apartment. They also make new screens that roll up from the bottom. So for years I was like living with this like giant ass tripod thing that would sit in my office in Brooklyn. I think you even came for one of those, Sherlyn, like if you came for Tom Popo. But yeah, I'd have to like lug it out, weighs like 30 pounds, set it up. Not fun, but it did let me watch projector stuff at home. Yeah, so much easier. Ultra short throws. I'm a fan. Sam, you also did, you've done a bunch of write-ups for things. What have you been working on?
So earlier this week, I got a chance to do a hands-on demo with Niantic's latest AR mobile game, NBA All-World. And so for anyone who's played like Niantic's other games like Pokemon Go or Ingress or whatever, it's a similar format. You know, you have your phone, you're going out into the world, and
you're
going
playing
into
virtual
various
basketball around the world.
Right, and you're going to like virtual real world locations to pick up items and stuff like that. The big difference with NBA All World is that instead of like going to gyms to do raids and Pokemon, and those are like, you know, various points of interest, NBA All World, their whole thing is you have to go to a basketball court in order to play other people and like challenge the leaderboard for that's attached to that basketball court. And it's like,
oh my God,
this is like kind of silly.
It's very silly.
But it's also kind of awesome because it's like you're bringing ballers back to the court because it's like,
to stare
you know,
at their
if you're
phones.
Playing, right. Sure. Okay. Like, if we can sidestep that small issue for a second, but it's like, you know, if you're playing NBA 2K at home or like, you know, my personal favorite NBA Street, you know, you're sitting at home on the couch. Sure. But like
you're actively,
you know,
doing something though, like you're playing.
Right, and so they're like, this is the Niantic's whole thing is like they think this is like the first game that's going to get like people who love basketball to go back outside. Like that's the classic parent line. It's like go outside and play,
hey,
and it's like
Pokemon
okay,
Go did make people go outside. Are people one thing I love about like I've lived near basketball courts and just would like hang out and work by them stuff. I love the sound of sneakers like swiping and moving. Are people doing that while they're playing? Like, are you like staring at your phone like? Squeak,
I mean,
squeak. Can you
so like, you know, the sound effects don't quite deliver that experience, but I mean, I think theoretically, and obviously this, like, you know, we'll see if this happens, but, like, I can kind of imagine a situation where, like, hey, maybe, you know, you love basketball, you like NBA All-World, you go out to a court to, like, challenge someone's leaderboard, and then suddenly you notice, oh, hey, there's people playing a pickup game. It's like, then you hop in, it's like, you know, you play a little real basketball, you get tired, you come out, take a breather, you play a little
or,
NBA
Or they're like, hey, wanna join this pickup game? And you're like, no, I'm busy. I'm busy playing NBA All-World. You know,
theoretically, it's like, it's kind of maybe bridging that gap between, like, online basketball community and, like, real basketball.
That's kind of cool.
So it's kind of cool. Obviously, the, you know, there's some tie-ins with, like, Adidas and Puma. Oh, Sherlyn's downloading it right now. I can see the screen.
Yes.
So, you know, there's tie-ins with Adidas and Puma where, like, you know, you can buy, like, pro baller shoes in the game. And so, like, that's,
of course,
like, you know,
there
this
we
is
go.
The
moni- now it
the
makes
monetization
sense.
Scheme is very clear. Uh-huh. Like, you know what's going on. But, like, you know, that's, for better or worse, that's part of, like, basketball culture. So I get it. Now, they don't have Nike in there yet, which is obviously, like, a weird kind of omission for, like, something that's, like, you know, really all about the basketball culture. But, you know, they have the licenses for all the big-name ballers. And, like, you know, you can go out and collect, like, your favorite roster, you know, go to different parks. And you'll see, like, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, like, on, you know, he'll be on the map, and you can go challenge him. If you beat him in a challenge, you can join him. Like,
do they
join
show, like, are they, like, are there AR models or something? Like, show up, like, they're on the court? Because that would be cool.
No. So, I don't, as far as I know, they don't have that, like, pass-through thing like Pokemon Go does. So, you know, you're still, like, you know, looking at your phone mostly, but you are have to, you know, go
out
to actual
courts. It
would
be kind of cool if you were playing, like, a virtual game, and then other people, like, watchers could just, like, pull up their phones, and it would be virtually represented, like, on the court.
That would be cool. I mean, they have some big plans for this. They're talking about, like, you know, nothing concrete, but, like, hey, we want to get some of the ballers to do mocap for the animations in the game, and that'd be really nice. You know, they want to get Nike on board. And so, and the game is launching globally, so, like, you can play across the world if you want. And that's cool because, you know, basketball, yes, it was invented in the U.S., but, you know, it's a very international sport now, so I think that's cool too.
Super cool.
You and I live, I know, I on my walk to the gym every day, I pass at least 3 basketball courts, if not 4. So I'm gonna be playing. That's why I downloaded.
I gotta post up in, like, the gym, in the court across the street from me
in Hamilton Park.
That's my core.
I'm going to go there and challenge you on that one because I pass that, like, fairly often too. And I'm going to go to the one in the park across the street from my gym. We're going to
do that.
We're going to fight, Sam. I'm going to drop by your apartment later today. Yeah. And then challenge your
talk about, like, the use of AR glasses. I would love for, if AR glasses were actually a thing, you could walk to a place and do some just, like, virtual pickup or something. Like, maybe it actually did involve mechanics from you. Maybe it's just like you're playing a Chuck E. Cheese game or something, but to just do it and with random stopper buys turn the entire world into an arcade. Sure, yeah, give me that. That sounds cool. One thing I want to mention, Sam, I do feel like, okay, people are coming out of the pandemic, is still happening, but people are out more, traveling more, doing stuff more. One cool AR project I really liked when I reported on it was Minecraft Earth. And Microsoft shut that down because that basically launched in the early part of the pandemic. Did you get to play with that? Like, I think that had a lot of potential too, to be able to, like, build stuff anywhere in the world.
Right, and build like, I think the premise was actually really awesome because you could build something in a virtual world, but then you could show it, like, anyone who walked by and pulled out their phone, they could see what you built. And, like, so you were kind of playing in this shared playscape. I like the idea, but I don't know. It's hard. And I think that's the big issue. You know, no one knows how, you know, NBA All-World is going to do. Even Niantic itself, they've had some pretty, like, you know, notable stumbles. There was the Harry Potter game that got canceled. There was also the Catan AR game that got canceled before it even got released. And so trying to build that community from the ground up is going to be a big challenge for the company. And especially because I had talked to some of the senior producers at Niantic, and they said there's almost no overlap between your Pokemon Go player and your traditional basketball video game player.
Yes,
which obviously makes a lot of sense if you think about it.
They would spend their time finding Pokemon rather than playing
basketball. But it just makes it really hard for them to, you know, reach out to people who, you know, they love sports and maybe aren't the most technically savvy. And that can definitely be a little bit of a challenge.
Kind of cool. Love that Niantic's playing with this new stuff. You also reviewed something else too, right, Sam?
That's correct. So just today, we published my review for the Aya Neo 2, which is basically a Windows-based Steam Deck Pro. And so very similar design, but it's even more compact. The important thing, though, is that it has a much nicer screen, full HD+, 1920 by 1200, so not 800p like the Steam Deck. And it has an AMD Ryzen 7 6800U processor, which is noticeably more powerful. We're talking about 25 to 40% faster frame rates. And so that makes a big difference. And it's just really nice. And there's also a couple of other little features. It has, you know, Hall Center joysticks. So there's like no dead zone. Controls feel really snappy. Obviously, with the big performance, battery life isn't that great. So we're looking at an hour and a half less battery life than the Steam Deck, which already was fine, but, you know, not ideal.
These are not things that I've learned. You're not going to take this on the subway. You're not going to, like, really go out and play too much. But it is great for, like, being on the couch, being on your bed, and just, like, not making that final step to your gaming PC, right? So...
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's it. There are a couple things that like make it, I wouldn't want it as my primary machine, but like this thing has three USB-C ports versus one for the Steam Deck. You know, that makes something. And Aya Neo does a really good job of like including a bunch of accessories. So you get international power adapters, you get two USB-C to USB-A dongles in the box, which is like not most laptop makers don't even bother with that. The one problem is that, you know, Aya Neo, Chinese company, don't really have a huge, you know, consumer presence over here. And so the documentation is a little spotty. There's a FAQ, like a link to FAQ inside the machine, but the link takes you to a doc that's written in Chinese. So it's one of those things where it's definitely for the enthusiast, but if you are that kind of person where you like, you know, a portable PC handheld and want something with a bit more performance, it's a really nice upgrade alternative to the Steam
Deck. What's the price of this?
It starts at $850, so almost double the price of a base Steam Deck. Although, remember, the base Steam Deck comes with 64 gigs of onboard storage, so you're almost certainly paying for SD card.
Like, the Steam Deck, I think a lot of people got, like, is the higher-end option, which is, what, over $600, $650?
Yeah, so, totally. For me, like, my personal Steam Deck, I have the 512 gig storage one, and that's closer to about $600. So you're looking at like, you know, $600, $650 versus $850 for the Aya Neo 2. So the gap isn't as big if you're like, you know, once again, if you're that person who wants a bit more from a portable handheld PC.
Yeah, it looks very much like almost like the Vita back in the day. Like it is a little more stylish, a little more polished. How is the build quality to you?
Surprisingly really great. It you know, they, and that's one of those things, like they really paid attention to detail. Like they made sure that like there's no external screws. There's little face plates that cover the screws. You can pry them off, and so if you want to get inside the system you can, but you know, it really makes for like a really nice streamlined design. And then even the other things, if you look at the screen, there's no bezel around the screen at all.
Beautiful.
And so it just it not only does it make the system more compact, but it just gives it a nicer appearance. Like you're not dealing with big black borders like you get on the Steam Deck. And the Steam Deck is huge. It's almost a foot wide. So, and this thing is more closer to 10 inches, which like, yes, doesn't sound like a huge bunch, but like it's definitely noticeably smaller and more compact.
Yeah, it's a couple inches. I've been doing some Steam Deck stuff with my daughter too. Like we basically did an opening mission of No Man's Sky just to kind of show her what it's capable of. And I have to hold it to let her do other things. But it is, no matter what you get, if it's the Steam Deck or this thing, like there is something to it. There is something powerful to being able to like,
I definitely feel like this whole section of the handheld PC market, there's a lot of like untapped potential there. And, you know, I think they've been around for years, but the release of the Steam Deck really brought more attention to that category. And so now you have like GPD, who's been a longtime player in this, and then the Aya Neo and like some other companies. And now they're like really, they have more availability for components, and they have, you know, they see the kind of roadmap in how to make these things more accessible to your average person.
The thing about the Steam Deck is that it runs Steam OS, so it runs on Linux, but it, you turn it on and your Steam library is there, right? And it's kind of like an easy interface. I see your screenshots and video for this, Sam. You're running this on Windows. And
So it out Windows. Of the box, it runs Windows. And so they did a couple interesting things where like there's no built-in touchpads like you get in the Steam Deck, but you can control the mouse using the joysticks, which is like just a nice little handy thing if you like, you know, want to navigate Windows at all.
I never use the touchpad on the Steam Deck, so yeah, sure.
I have an important question for Sam.
Uh-huh.
So I just spent the last however minutes y'all were talking
playing. Yeah, I saw you just like staring at your phone. Great. Love it.
I finished the tutorial and everything. I have one. I chose my name, by the way. I'm going to be Share Balls. It's great.
Interesting question. Choice. Okay.
Yeah. It goes, who do I cheer for? Should I pick the Nets or the Knicks, Sam?
Didn't you say you have a pair of Kyries?
Don't tell anyone that. I bought that only because they look nice.
You know, I mean,
only because they look nice. I don't support. Uh-huh.
I mean, it depends. Like the Knicks are kind of like a weird, like up and coming team in a weird way because they've been bad forever. Okay. And then meanwhile, you have like Brooklyn. They have like KD and Kyrie and a bunch of all stars, and then Ben Simmons, who doesn't know how to shoot but is getting paid $40 million a year.
These young up and comers, Knicks. Yeah.
I mean, the easy way is, hey, what team's colors do you like more? Orange and blue or black and silver?
I like this one that looks like a basketball that got a monster that ripped it out of it. This one.
I think that's the Raptors logo. So you're supporting Toronto.
Okay, sure. Toronto. Shrillin does love Toronto. Okay.
Yeah. Let's move on while Shrillin learns to play this game. Let's move on to what we're working on. And we got some of your stuff, Sam. I just want to say I'm finishing up the Mac Mini review. I have some wink, wink, winky, winky VR stuff coming soon in the next few weeks. There's that. And maybe one review from Sundance, the one about long-term space travel and how that affects people. So I'm hoping to write that up this week, and I'll be out for the next couple weeks. Shrillin, what are you up to?
Samsung's next week. We will be live streaming Samsung's Unpacked event here on the Engadget YouTube channel. Sam and I will be co-hosting. Come over and join us then. We will be just chit-chatting with y'all and dropping our jaws at what Samsung has unveiled. And because of that, we're also prepping for Samsung. It's going to be fun. Also, Chinese New Year.
Also Chinese New Year.
And then NBA All World.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. And then stuff like... I'm working on all the edgy gadgets.
All the edge.
So the PlayStation Edge controller and hoping to get in the Razer Edge, their game streaming thing. So hopefully we'll have some coverage on that, those two devices real
Very
soon.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week as we wind down. Trillin, what do you got for us?
All right, I got three things. I'm going to start with this obvious thing you all know, kind of related to what we were talking about just now, which is I've been playing Pokemon Scarlet. We talked briefly about this.
A little late, but hey, any time's a good time to play Pokemon.
Extremely late, but it's been very fun. I don't know what the difference between Scarlet and Violet are. I think maybe the
it's mostly the legendaries, and there's a couple of Pokemons that are only available in certain titles.
Gotcha. So one of my friends was playing Scarlet. I was like, oh, shoot, that looks really nice. So I went and tried to get it, and then actually have to thank our executive editor, Aaron Supores, who gifted me the game because I couldn't find a free version. So there you go. It's been fun. Awesome. Love it. Reminds me of my childhood.
Who's your and favorite Pokemon so far?
I had to pick of the starter Pokemon, I
just
picked
in general
Fuego-Go.
Or the starters. Just who's your favorite Pokemon in the new game?
It's probably my Fuego-Go or the Koraidon that I'm writing. So I haven't seen that many yet. They're all really stupid. There's an olive called Smoliv. The names are hilarious. The names are great.
This is why people like Pokemon, okay?
Yeah. Names are awesome. And then my next thing is, remember how I got hooked on Vampire Survivor? If you don't like the vampire theme, or you found the graphics kind of low res and lo-fi, there's actually a different... There's so many dupes now.
Yeah.
So many. But I've been playing this other dupe of it called Survivor.io. Yep. It's basically Vampire Survivor, but with robots. It's quite funny.
Yeah.
The reason I want to shout it out is I haven't played through all of it yet, but the reason I want to shout it out is if you get high enough, apparently one of the weapons you can unlock is a durian.
Sure.
It is pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I don't see that in Vampire Survivor.
I feel like robots would be immune to durians, but
that's true. Well, unless they have smell
sensors.
Wait
till you see how it evolves.
Yeah.
Well, it's got thorns.
A lot of these came out before Vampire Survivor, to be honest. I believe Robots.io even did. So it could be a thing.
Okay.
We won't talk about Hentai Survivors, which is also a thing.
No.
They're just putting that out there for Shrillin. Okay.
I'm going to look for it. And then the last thing is a TV show that I just watched yesterday because it actually only premiered yesterday. It's called Extraordinary. It's on Hulu.
Yes, I need to see this.
It was surprisingly fun. I just saw it like looking for something to watch, and it is funny. It's basically based about this world. It's a UK TV show about this world where everyone, when they turn 18, they'll get a superpower. And this main character does not have hers despite being like way past 18. I don't know her actual age yet. She lives and these like abilities range like the run the gamut really. You've got the typical flying, super strength. You've also got someone who can talk to the dead or take on, you know, spirits.
It sounds very much like the My Hero Academia style of
I was
like
just about
random
to say
superpowers.
That, yes.
Right. So yeah, cool.
But not in school, right? But here's the fun part. Some of these powers, one person, without spoiling it too much for you, can 3D print stuff out of his book.
I've heard this. Yeah. I think we can assume
awesome.
How the mechanics of that work. So, okay.
I don't know, yeah. Man. But y'all gotta watch it. It's pretty fun, and it's really well done.
Cool.
Kind of don't like the characters a little bit, but I think that's part of the draw here. So
one of those things. I just want to quickly shout out. I'm watching a bunch of the Sundance stuff, but I will highlight two movies that I think are fantastic and everybody should check out. Polite Society, which is directed and written by Nita Manzur. She created We Are Lady Parts on Peacock. Also another great thing to watch on Peacock. It's about a British Pakistani Muslim family. And basically about two sisters, one a teenager and another like late 20s, the teenager, Ria Khan, wants to be a stunt double. She wants to be a stunt performer in movies. And the movie is basically about her learning that her sister wants to be an artist. This movie, I would basically call this year is Everything Everywhere All at Once, because Ria Khan she studies martial arts. Events and conflicts in this movie are handled through elaborate wire martial arts fights. And I kind of love that. It's also really funny. It's a movie about sisterhood and how these two relate, but also about like committing your life to a dream and trying to figure out what to do if you're not actually good at it. You know, like I think it's pretty dope. Great colors. Also really fantastic. Like there is a wedding dance sequence later in this movie that is basically like an FU dance sequence, but also transitions into a full scale fight. And this is like everything. This is like everything I love. Love to see this out here. And love makes me love Nita Manzur all the more. So this is going to be hitting American theaters, I think, within a couple of months. I don't have the exact release date here. But I know it's going to be in theaters. So it's definitely worth checking out. That's Polite Society. Also, want to shout out a movie I think you'd really enjoy, Sholin. It's called Rye Lane, R-Y-E, directed by Rain Alan Miller. And if you like the Before Sunset type of movies, it's about two young folks, like two 20-somethings from London, who stumble into each other. One is reeling from a breakup, and it's an actor I really like from Industry. His name is escaping me right now. David Johnson from Industry. And another is a girl who basically sees that he is dealing with like this breakup in a bad way, and they decide to just like hang out together for a day, and it turns into this like really sweet, funny, romantic experience of them just trying to like get to know each other but also dealing with their baggage. It's super colorful. It gives us like a great look at like different folks in the Black community in London as well, like a side of London I don't think we typically get to see in romantic comedy. So this is fantastic. It's super fun. It's called Rye Lane. This will also be in theater soon. March 31st in the US. So it's so good. I think you will love it. And anybody, if you poo-poo romantic comedies, I think this is one of the like good ones. It's genuinely sweet and funny and not like saccharine. This is very much Before Sunset style, and I really dug it. Sam, anything you want to shout out?
I've been watching Trigun Stampede, which is the kind of reboot remaster of the original Trigun. So anyone who watched like Toonami back in the day in like the early 2000s, and so, I love it. You don't need to watch the first one to appreciate the new one. The animation is great. It is computer animated anime, but I think it looks awesome. This might be the best CG anime I've seen yet.
I instinctively hate CG anime, and this one at least looks interesting, I guess, yeah.
And so this series is more closely tied to the manga, and I was, you know, for anyone who like saw the first one, like there was like a jokey quality, you know, slapdash comedy quality to the other one. This one is like, there's still a little bit of that, but it goes hard. Like episode three, just things just fly off the rail. So it's a lot more mature. It's a lot more graphic. But it has the art style is incredible. And, you know, for me or anyone who remembers the original, I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Cool, cool, cool. One thing I want to mention, people have been asking me, like, where can I see some of these movies? Sundance is still doing virtual stuff this year, so I'm not in, you know, Park City. But you can buy individual tickets for some Sundance movies. I think it's like $20 to $25. But for movies that you may not see till the end of the year, it may be worth it. And the whole, like, process, you can watch on your TV. It's super easy, so it's worth checking out. And stay tuned for my coverage and maybe some additional coverage around Sundance.
Well, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
I'm at Devendra on Twitter. Still not going anywhere anytime soon. I'm Devendra at Mastodon.social. I'm Mastodon. I have a podcast about movies and TV at the Filmcast Podcast.
And you can find Sam online at...
at Sam Rutherford on Twitter. And as always, on Engadget.com.
And if you want to send me your favorite basketball team so I can choose which one to support, give me a good reason too. I am at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter and also on Mastodon. You can find all my links there. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. If you have that much money, you can talk to me. We will invest it for you, okay?